Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Chiefs Digest Live Show with yours truly, Matt Derrick. 7:04, for those of you who have been to the live shows before, you will see that this is like an early appearance for me. 7:04, showing up only 4 minutes late, starting a live stream is pretty good for me. Hopefully, the more I do of these, the better I will get and less annoying that I will get. But I've had a lot of fun doing this, so I would like to do more and more of these. And I thought a great way to do it is just to take some of your questions, because honestly, that's one of the most fun things that I get during these live streams is getting some of the comments from all of you. And I asked folks on Twitter today and Threads, Facebook, for some questions just to get us started tonight. And I'm going to give preference to those of you who are in the in the chat online line and get your questions up first. So, you know, hey, if you need to pop in and out, hopefully you'll get your question answered. I'm also going to be working on getting these converted into a podcast stream. So for those of you who have been asking for just the audio of this, hopefully that's going to be available here pretty soon. Obviously, you can already get me in podcast form once a week with myself and Nick Jacobs over at the 41 is the Mic, our podcast that we do each week after each game. Because of our schedules, sometimes it's not until the next day after the game, but we have a lot of fun breaking down the action, talking about the game, how it came about, what we think it means for the future, looking a little ahead to the following week, and just breaking down the team in general. So without further ado, let's just jump into it, because I know Ethan has got a couple of questions and we're just going to dive right in. So Ethan, what do you think the wide receiver rotation should be? Probably a very topical question because of what we saw with the Raiders game this weekend, when, you know, due to injuries, the Chiefs really streamlined the rotation quite a bit. What I think they should do versus what they will do are probably two different answers. But one, you know, as far as Mecole Hardman goes, he's going to be out for at least 3 more games. And given that he's had wrist surgery, could be longer than that. So obviously that one injury alone is going to shorten your bench a little bit. Kadarius Toney, I do expect to be back pretty soon. We will see. The hip injury that popped up over the weekend, we'll see how serious it is. Andy Reid's still not talking about it being too serious, but we know how those things are. So let's, you know, but I also, at the same time, I don't necessarily see Toney playing a much larger role than what he has been so far this season. I mean, I think that because of the number of injuries that he's had, and that knee injury and the surgery back in training camp really put him behind the eight ball. I mean, this isn't the fault of Toney. I mean, he's just kind of the victim of circumstance sometimes with these injuries, and the knee is a great example. Just having that much rust and getting thrown out there in week one probably wasn't the best situation for him. And I think if the Chiefs had it back, they probably wouldn't have thrown him out there. Yes, they expected a larger piece of him in the offense this year because they thought that he was ready to be a full-time starter and an every down player and injury free. Maybe he is that guy. But I think right now you're going to see him as a rotational piece, probably not a starter, but a guy that when he's healthy, they'll probably get about, you know, 20-30 snaps a game sometimes, maybe less, maybe in some game plans, maybe a little bit more. But I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, especially, you know, what we've seen the last couple of games, I am buying all in on Rashee Rice. And that's somewhat unusual for me because I do truly believe, just based on history, that playing wide receiver for an Andy Reid offense is usually not a one year and in great success. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster had a good year last year doing it in one year in, but he was also a veteran, you know, a rookie coming in. DeSean Jackson didn't go for 1,000 yards as a rookie under Andy Reid. Jeremy Maclin didn't do it. Tyreek Hill didn't do it. Rashee Rice right now is on pace for over 800 yards. And that's even discounting the fact that some of his best games have been of late. he just has a 100-yard game. I mean, he has another 100-yard game or two, and all of a sudden, he's going to be a guy who could pace for 900, 1,000 yards. So I think he's got to be at the top of the rotation. I don't think that the Chiefs are willing to give up on Sky, and I certainly don't think that at this point they're looking to downgrade the job of MVS. So I think that both those two guys are going to be at the top of the rotation. Justin Watson is going to be there too. Is it the intention to get him 11 targets a game like, you know, he got against the Eagles? No. But they do view Justin Watson as their most complimentary receiver, the guy who runs almost every route perfectly, knows where he's supposed to be all the time. And his presence is usually to help other guys get open and run those kind of routes. So I think you're going to continue to see a lot of him. And those four guys would be at the top of my rotation. I would have those guys playing most of the snaps. Justin Watson, really? I mean, even though on some teams I think he would be maybe the fourth guy, I would probably include him in the top three right now. I think the Chiefs have a little bit more confidence, even despite, you know, the occasional drop. I think they have more confidence in MVS right now. So I think he's going to be out there for probably a majority of the snaps. Sky is probably right there on the bubble. But I would bet, not the house, but I would bet a fair number of points on Rashee Rice having more snaps than any other receiver the rest of the season. And then, you know, it really comes back down to injuries and availability. We'll see in the other guys. And Ethan, very kind of you. I just saw the contribution there. That is incredibly thankful. I truly appreciate that. This is, it's not a labor of love for me. This is my profession doing this. But I am a solo operator. You know, I'm not the Kansas City Star. I'm not ESPN. I'm not even The Athletic. You know, I am a journalist all on my own, and this is my own operation. So, definitely appreciate that, you know, getting onto YouTube and everything is, there's certainly been a business move, but it's something I have a lot of fun doing. So Ethan, I truly appreciate that contribution, and anybody else, you'll move to the top of the line if you make one. So don't forget that. I am a capitalist after all, I guess. Ethan, you had a second question too, and, I'll try not to pontificate as much on this one, but, probably a fairly short answer. Nick Bolton, I do think he will probably practice Wednesday, barring any setback. He's ready to get back out there. He wants to. The Chiefs are certainly pacing him. I think he will definitely practice this week in some role, probably a fairly limited. I don't think he's going to play against Green Bay, but I think if everything certainly goes well this week, and I think that he'll have a much better chance of playing against Buffalo. And that's the game I would circle anyway. Even though I've got a lot of questions about Buffalo, coming off the bye, that's going to be a huge game for the Bills. They have to win that game to stay really in the playoff race and to really prove that they belong. And they're going to have to run the football. And Josh Allen, as much as I love Drew Tranquil, and I think he's done a fantastic job, Nick Bolton versus Josh Allen, I would prefer that matchup more than Drew Tranquil. And certainly I think that the Chiefs are a better team with a healthy Nick Bolton out there. So don't think it'll be this week, but I would be surprised if we did not see him on the practice field this week in at least a limited role. Going on down to Derelict. Have there been whispers or discussions of how the Chiefs can stop the brotherly shove in the building if they face them in the Super Bowl? That's a really good question, because, you know, it came up a lot during Eagles week about how you stop that. And, you know, I don't think that the Chiefs held anything back, but I do think that they seriously believe that there's a chance that they're going to meet the Eagles again. I mean, that's kind of the conversation that I heard from a couple of the defensive guys, is that, you know, they think they're going to see that team again. So, you know, would they have put their best stuff out there to stop the brotherly shove? They probably would still try it in the regular season, but if there is a secret weapon about how that they can do it, you know, Steve Spagnuolo talked about looking a lot at the Washington Commanders tape about how they played them, that they had a little bit of success. Not sure anybody's really figured out, but it's really about leverage, and it's about winning in the middle. And the problem is that the Eagles have three really good interior linemen that get incredible leverage. To me, the success of that play is less about, you know, Jalen Hurts getting shoved from behind, although that certainly helps. But a lot of teams do that, you know, to a certain degree on almost any short yardage run play. I mean, the Chiefs have had some conversions in the past. Andrew Wiley was really good at that, as far as just, you know, once a running back got into the line, Wiley was not afraid to just jump in there and start shoving him forward. So a lot of teams do it to a certain degree. The Eagles are just really, really good at it. But really, it comes down to that leverage. Question is, do the Chiefs feel like they can get leverage in that middle somehow? I think they still probably have some questions, and I'm not sure they've solved anything on it. But I can tell you that, you know, Steve Spagnuolo right now, I mean, what they talk about as far as stopping the brotherly shove is making sure the Eagles don't get into third and one. If you can keep them in third and two, even, they would prefer that. They'd prefer third and eight, you know, something a lot worse than that, third and four. But that's their strategy as far as stopping the Eagles, the short yardage play, is just don't let them get in the third and one because they're just too good at it. So that's basically their strategy. Moving on to Dan, what does the Chiefs running back room look like in 2024? Really good question, because Isaiah Pacheco will be in year three and very affordable still. So that's just start of your room right there. I don't think that Clyde Edwards-Helaire will be back. Anything can change. Obviously, there's, you know, you can't predict the future, and that's a long way off. But as a free agent to be going into the offseason, yeah, I do think that Clyde will test the market. And, you know, I think he is probably looking for a change of pace. I think the Chiefs would probably be looking for a different direction as well. It's possible that he sticks around, but I wouldn't imagine it. Jerick McKinnon will be a free agent as well. And based on what we've seen this year, I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs were looking to get younger. I mean, there's still a lot of things that Jerick McKinnon can do, but would I put it 50-50? I would probably take the under on him not being back. So then you maybe get into some young guys like a Denarik Prince still being around. You know, will LaMichael Perine still be in the conversation? Probably. I think, you know, he's done enough to prove that he belongs in the NFL. So I think he would certainly, unless he gets a better offer, I think he would stick with the Chiefs, because I think he'd see the opportunity for some playing time next year with a really good team. So I think he would be there. And obviously the Chiefs have been decent at finding talent, either late round or undrafted at running back. So you potentially have three guys who could be back competing for jobs. I would imagine they would continue to look for another undrafted free agent or a late round draft pick that can add to that room. So they would obviously probably look around the league too for some, you know, free agents, you know, maybe a reserve future contract from another club at the end of the season. Can't see a big name free agent necessarily unless something really falls into their lap, and I can't necessarily see a trade or anything of sort like that. So I think you're looking at another young, inexpensive room next year, but Isaiah Pacheco certainly in it. Denarik Prince, a really good chance of being in it. Michael Perine, probably. I mean, so you got some options there, but I think that, you know, you'll continue to see a little bit of turnover in that room. Ethan, thank you. I appreciate that. And Aaron from Brownsville, Texas. Hey, great to have you on. Really appreciate that. And Hefe, like that there too. Let's go to Brian. Brian, is there any chance of Minnehue? Is there a plan if Jones leaves? Now, Minnehue is signed for next year. It's kind of designed as a contract that they could get away from if necessary. But, you know, it was created as basically a two-year contract for a Minnehue. So I could certainly see him being back next year. Honestly, whether or not Chris Jones leaves, that's a whole other kettle of fish. And, I mean, I do think it's going to be difficult to get Chris Jones under the salary cap next year, and certainly depending on what his demands are. You know, we'll probably get into that at some point. Maybe somebody has a question about it, we can dive into it later. But for a Minnehue, I think chances are him being pretty high coming back next year. He's got there's enough money the way that contract is structured that I think he will be back next season, and he's been playing well enough. So, you know, for me, that's not a problem. I think you'd certainly love to have a Minnehue back. And remember, Mike Dana is a free agent as well. And if you lose Mike Dana, I think you would definitely be happy having Charles and Minnehue back. So and Dana is probably another really good topic to dive into about whether or not you're going to be able to keep him, because he's on pace for close to 10 sacks. And if he gets into double-digit sacks, he is going to get a decent-sized contract offer from somebody this offseason. And I don't know if the Chiefs will be able to match that. So there's a chance, you know, given that Mike Dana is having a really good contract season, that you'll have to replace him. Well, Minshew is probably that guy. I mean, I could see a Minshew and Carl Loftus being your starters next year on the outside. Marshall, thank you very much for the support and contribution. It's very much appreciated. So you get bumped to the front of the line. It's further integrated into the offense. Let's see. Marshall, I think, Tony. Yes. Yes. Kadarius Tony. That's who I thought you were talking about, but I appreciate the follow-up comment there to make sure. For this year, I mean, I mentioned it at the very top of the show, the first question. I mean, I think that that's probably his role for this year. It's going to be bigger than it was at the end of last season, you know, where he was just getting maybe a handful of touches and it was really for specific packages designed for him. I think he'll get more touches this year, you know, the rest of the season, if he can get healthy and stay healthy. But is he going to be a, you know, 60 to 80% of the snaps kind of player? No, I don't think that's going to happen this year. I think he's just missed too much time. I think there's too many injuries. Now, does that happen in January, you know, once the playoffs get here, you know, and the Chiefs maybe shorten the bench a little bit, you know, does he then become one of the top four guys that they're relying on? Possibly. But I still think at this point, with how much he has missed and the injuries and just, you know, the challenges that he has gone through, I think that the best you could hope for is somebody who does, like I said earlier, get you in that 20 to 30 snap count range. I would say a bit more than a gadget player, because I think he's capable of giving you more than, say, 10 catches for 200 yards the rest of the season. The potential is there. It's just going to depend on the health and where he's at. But I think that's the other challenge too, is that going back to that knee surgery, there was never a really good, decent chance that Kadarius Toney was ever going to be 100% this year. He was always going to be a little bit less than that. Now he's moving really good out there. So I mean, to me, he's not showing a lot of the ill effects of the knee surgery. So maybe he's fully recovered from that, but then you throw in the toe and the ankle and the hip. And then, you know, hey, have some of these injuries been caused by, you know, favoring the knee? I mean, you never know. There's those things can happen. So, I don't know that he will end up being one of the top three receivers from a rotational standpoint, but I think he can be a bit more than just a gadget player who gets a handful of snaps. I think he'll certainly get more work than that. Circling back to Whitney, do you think Justin Ross will be released by the commissioner anytime soon and any suspension from the NFL? And do you expect the Chiefs to welcome him back? It's a good question, because he certainly could be still subject to some discipline from the NFL, even though going into the diversion program. The question would be if the NFL gives him, for lack of a better phrase, time served. For the games that he has already sat out and missed, that remains to be kind of an open question. So it's possible that they could go ahead and reinstate him. It's possible that they reinstate him with a suspension. It's also possible that they leave him on the exempt list the rest of the season. I mean, it could go a couple of different directions. I think that once you have seen charges dropped, however, though, in a player indoor diversion program, the league leaving the player out there in limbo on the exempt list is a little bit unusual. This is a bit of an unusual situation, though, so we'll see. As for the Chiefs bringing him back, I mean, that's going to be the tough thing, because, you know, he's been away for a little while now. He has missed, obviously, some sort of development time. And, you know, and you don't really have the, you know, he's on the 53-player roster, so it's not like you're going to get a, you know, even if the league, you know, pulled him off the commissioner's exempt list, you might get a waiver for a week or two where you don't have to add him onto the 53. But that's the trickier part for me as the Chiefs, you know, what decision do you make there? And that's even just setting aside, you know, that it's a part of it that's a football discussion. I mean, there could be another discussion about whether you continue to want Justin Ross in the organization. I think that as much as they've stuck with him and what they think of Justin Ross and how much they've invested in not just time and money, but, you know, in supporting the player, I'd imagine they would welcome him back. I could also imagine that maybe there's a possibility they would try to sneak him onto the practice squad. I mean, he would have to clear waivers to do that. And I'm not certain that another team would take a chance on putting him on their 53 right now. So maybe they could do that. It's a dicey one. I mean, you take chances, but I actually think there's a decent opportunity that they could do that if they wanted to. Now the chances are also, I mean, like you said, you could lose him on the waivers, or even another team could entice him to join their practice squad instead. A lot of things can happen, but we'll see. I mean, obviously the first thing that needs to happen is for the NFL and the commissioner's office to make their decision about what his status is going to be. It's a tricky one, but either way, I mean, if something gets resolved before the end of the season, the Chiefs will have to make a decision. And I don't necessarily have any great insight into what it would be, but I do know that, and I think you get the sense that if the Chiefs were ready to part ways with Justin Ross, they could have done it at any point in the last few weeks since the suspension. So, you know, remember when Kareem Hunt ended up on the commissioner exempt list, they did not stick around with Kareem Hunt and they just went ahead and released him immediately. I think that's pretty good indication about what the Chiefs think, that they would keep Justin Ross around. So we'll see what happens. I mean, there could be a resolution here pretty soon, but let's see. So Sugary Special K, any potential 2024 free agents that you think that the Chiefs will target? Great question. Probably a little early for me. I'm still too hip deep in this year to look at too much the next year. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to look. I mean, obviously one question is going to be that the Chiefs will not have a ton of money. And I can tell you that, you know, from this year's free agency class, the Chiefs are going to target their own. That is their number one priority this offseason. Is not going to be other teams' free agents, but it's going to be their own, because starting in January is when the Chiefs can make long-term extensions with Nick Bolton, Trey Smith, and Creed Humphrey. And they want to lock up those three guys. So that's the first order of business, and that'll be the number one priority. Now, after that, I think you can count on receiver being a position that they're going to target, and they will look at the free agent market and see what's out there. But once again, I mean, that's going to circle back to the fact that the Chiefs are not going to have a ton of money in the offseason. So that's going to hamper them somewhat, you know, and I'm glancing at the top of the list here. You know, as far as who the Chiefs could be interested in, you know, I've always heard, you know, little tidbits here and there that maybe the Chiefs are interested in a guy like Josh Jacobs. You know, we were talking about the running back position earlier, and the Chiefs maybe probably not bringing in a veteran. There could be. I mean, there's always a possibility. And I tell you what, I mean, after what we saw against the Raiders in the first half, I mean, I don't think I'd be saying that's a bad move. But and Saquon Barkley is probably going to be a free agent, you know, depending on what happens with the Giants. I mean, that's probably dreaming, because both those guys I think would make more money than I'd be comfortable putting into the running back spot. But you always hear rumors that, hey, that the Chiefs like both those guys. I do think that, however, they like Isaiah Pacheco, and let's face it, I mean, there's a need at receiver. So if, you know, hey, I'd look at a guy like Tyler Boyd, if, you know, he doesn't get something done with the Bengals. That would be a good one to me. Don't think I would go down the Michael Thomas road and looking down at just, you know, potential, you know, free agents on the list for next year. I mean, glancing at the list of the big name free agents, there's not a lot that I could see that the Chiefs will probably be in the market for. You know, there could be some surprises, especially that they just make some different decisions. And obviously, I mean, you know, trying to keep Chris Jones would be a big deal of it in of itself. So, like I said, some of their own players and getting, you know, those guys inked up long term are going to be bigger priorities than outside. And those can also, I mean, help out a little bit. I mean, they need to free some space. But and also, too, I mean, except for Donovan Smith, I mean, Mike Edwards will be a free agent. Drew Tranquil will be a free agent. Those haven't been big number guys, although Drew Tranquil might prove that he deserves a bigger deal than he signed this offseason. But I mean, the Chiefs do have a few, Tommy Townsend, I mean, think about punters getting big deals. Tommy's hired the right guy. He's a Drew Rosenhaus client now. So maybe Drew can get Tommy a lot of money. That's another guy that you might have to pay, you know, top of the market if you want to keep him. So that might get a little tricky, but I'll be honest, Sugar. I mean, I think at this point, I'd be surprised if the Chiefs were big free agent spenders next year, but I think they're going to be really big spenders on trying to keep their own guys. So Caesar with a comment, let's CEH walk and pick up Austin Eckler. You know what? Right price. Austin Eckler would look pretty darn good at the Chiefs offense. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Mizzou 19, MIZ, did the Chiefs reach an injury settlement with Fortson? If not, is it too late to do so and potentially bring him back? No, they have not. He is still on the roster. He's still with the team. And Jody's contract is really interesting because he has been around for a while, but I believe this past year was his tender year. So I think it was actually his fourth. I'm always trying to remember because, like I said, Jody's seasons that he's accrued. No, he's still a 2-year guy. So this was year 3, I guess, for him. So they still have control over Jody Fortson. Now he'll be 20. He turns 28 here this week. His birthday's in a couple of days. So he's on the roster, not going anywhere. I mean, they're continuing with his rehab, and I haven't seen him around the building, but obviously he's getting his treatment and working on things. He won't be coming back likely this year. Well, I don't believe. Yeah, he went on before the beginning of the season, so he won't be coming back this year. It's possible. I mean, he is going to be 28, so he's going to be a little bit older. You know, we'll see. And, you know, the injuries he's just had such a bad run of luck. I mean, I would love to see the kid back because he's a good guy. He's a great person to have in the locker room. He's a lot of fun to talk to, and I know fans love him too. But the Chiefs do. He will be a restricted free agent, so won't be super expensive. They can keep him. There's a possibility, you know, being a restricted free agent, they might not tender him. And then they try to sign him, you know, without the tender. So, but that would obviously give other teams a chance to sign him as well. But I think there's a decent chance that he's back, especially at a, you know, a low cost deal. But the Chiefs do have control, so they can kind of dictate a little bit about where he is next season. Austin, at this point in the season, what do you think the biggest draft needs will be? Another good question. And you know, it's going to depend obviously a little bit about where the Chiefs are drafting. Obviously they're going to be drafting at the end of the first round again. But we'll see how the draft class shakes out. I'll be really interested. I mean, there's some first round players that I think the Chiefs should and would be interested in. It's just a question of whether they'd be available there. The player that I'm most intrigued in from a Chiefs standpoint that I just do not believe will be in their range because I think he's going to go way too high is John Ault, the kid from Notre Dame. Obviously his dad, Mizzou, you know, or Mizzou, Chiefs legend. And so, you know, that to me would be a great fit, but also he's just a dominating tackle. So you throw that, I mean, that's a huge need for the Chiefs. You know, I think it's interesting because the tackle position, they've got Donovan Smith's obviously going to be a free agent again this offseason. I think that's been enough of a success that if the Chiefs could get him back on an affordable contract, they would. Question is, you know, what's he got left after the season and would some other teams be interested? You know, Juwan Taylor's not going anywhere with his contract. He can be left or right, so the Chiefs have some options there. Wanya Morris, gosh. Getting my guys and my names. You guys, if you've been around me enough, you probably do know that I am sometimes terrible with names. So I will transpose some things. I'm not as bad as some people, but I do it on occasion, and I apologize. I know I do it. So I think it's a left brain, right brain thing. But if it makes anybody feel better, I do it with my friends too. So it's not even just players or people around the league. I do it with some friends I've known for 30 years. So. But yeah, I mean, let's face it, a receiver is going to be a position that they're going to put every resource that they've got in this offseason. I mean, you know, whether it's looking at free agents, draft picks too, you know, and then, you know, you got to look a little bit at who are going to be your free agents you know, not this year, but next year that you're going to be replacing. And, you know, and that can be a little, you know, I mean, pretty key too. I mean, looking at some of the guys, you know, Justin Reed will be a free agent. Now they've already dipped into safety a couple of times. So, you know, do they need to? I mean, and I think there's a pretty good possibility that they'll try and extend Justin Reed. But if you're talking about going into 2025 with Brian Cook and Jamari Connor as your safeties, I wouldn't be opposed to that. I mean, so far, Connor has looked really good to me. And Brian Cook is certainly progressing along and coming along. Yeah, Harrison Butker will be a free agent. You know, you're not making a draft pick there. Seeing if there's anybody else that I'm thinking that's really, you know, big. I mean, I think you would certainly circle tackle is always going to be a position until you find your bookends and franchise guys there. You know, depending on whether or not you get an extension with Nick Bolton done, you know, I could see you looking at linebackers, especially as a potential middle linebacker, because even though, you know, the Chiefs liked the idea of Leo Chanel maybe playing that position, I think he's better suited elsewhere, and they've kind of found that. So I wouldn't necessarily think that he would be the middle linebacker of the future, but that might be a spot that you look. Chiefs are always going to look at corners because they feel like you just can't have enough long lean guys that can cover. I know I'm listing off every position here, but you know, once you get to the middle rounds with the Chiefs, you just never know. I mean, they will look for value, and they will look for, you know, guys that they think have tremendous ceilings and upsides. But as far as like first three rounds, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was some combination right now of the premium positions, wide receiver, offensive line, and defensive line, and particularly at tackle. Tackle may be a position that you address as well, because, you know, we'll see with Chris Jones. I mean, that may just be the where you need to throw some numbers, is at the defensive tackle spot. So wouldn't surprise me. And we'll go to Marshall. Marshall, thank you very much. Appreciate the contribution, and thank you for supporting the show. Did Bieniemy bring more edge to the offense? This is a question I get asked quite a bit. And I mean, I hesitate to put too much about anything that's gone wrong with the Chiefs offense this year on losing Bieniemy, because I think it just discounts that, you know, the Chiefs had a lot of turnover in a lot of, in some places. I mean, they've got two new tackles. They've got a young receiver group. They still have a young running back, you know, and running back room. I mean, they're young in a lot of places on this offensive side. And on top of that, they've had a lot of coaching turnover. It wasn't just EB, you know, Greg Lewis leaves, you move some coaches around, Todd Pinkston comes in, you shuffled some people. So, you know, they've had a lot of turnover, but I don't know if it's edge exactly, but I'll say I think you missed two things with Eric Bieniemy being around. And one is less maybe edge and more accountability. And that's not to say that Matt Nagy is not holding people accountable, or other coaches aren't holding people accountable. There's plenty of accountability going on in that building, but Eric Bieniemy did it in a different way. I mean, and the thing is that accountability and coaching styles, I mean, that varies from guy to guy. I mean, different players respond to different coaching. And so there were certainly players who took to EB's coaching. And is there another EB on this team on the offensive side? I mean, as far as his aggressive, in-your-face kind of, you know, personality, no. I mean, you know, it's not that these guys aren't intense. Matt Nagy is a very intense coach. It's just in a different way. And some of these guys are loud, just in a different way. Eric Bieniemy had a style. I mean, he had an approach about him. So I do think that they certainly miss a little bit of that. I think the other thing that they miss is having his voice in the game planning room, because even though, you know, we talk about Andy Reid having 51% control of the offense and ultimately the buck stops with him, the reality is that the weekly game planning process for Andy Reid is very collaborative. It is not just him in a room coming up with the game plan. I mean, he works with Matt Nagy, David Girardi, the quarterback's coaches, gets involved. Andy Heck obviously has a voice from the offensive line. You know, even though Todd Pinkston and Connor Embry and running backs and wide receivers are new this year, they certainly have a little bit of a voice, but – you know, what you're talking about with Andy Reid, Matt Nagy, David Girardi, Joe Blamire, those are probably the four biggest voices that you've got as far as putting together the game plan every week. And like I said, other guys have a contribution too. What when we're naming off all these guys, though, is that we're not naming off anybody who's a run first kind of offensive thinker. And that's what Eric Bieniemy was. So I do think that there were probably times in the past that Eric Bieniemy was the guy pounding the table saying, we need to run the football. We need to get this guy the rock. And that's important. I mean, I think you need that. I mean, and there's been some times that the Chiefs, you know, this year especially, have let the run game get away from them. Now, sometimes it's because they turn RPOs become passes instead of runs that maybe they were, you know, designed and intended to be runs. But I think that's another way that, you know, just as far as having a voice in the room, you know, advocating to run the football, or a voice on the microphone in the game to run the football, I think you're missing that. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that I really Edge is interesting, because you know what? Edge was the theme last year. You know, every year the Chiefs have a word, you know, that's kind of their rallying term. And Edge was the one last year that going on the Super Bowl ring. Interestingly, this year's word is United. And I don't know. I mean, if that tells you a lot about, you know, just the state of the team and kind of their mentality and everything. But like I said, Edge, I'm not sure is exactly what they're missing with EB, but, you know, as far as just that, having that voice, that personality, somebody who's not afraid to get in somebody's face when they need to from time to time, I do think that they miss that. Let's see. Let's circle back here. Next question. Let's go to Jay. Jay, the Chiefs offense took a step forward last weekend. Absolutely. It was a little gimmicky, in my opinion. Do you believe they will add and build upon last week? Thank you very much, Jay. I appreciate that. Yeah, I do think this was a bit of a turning point. Now, we'll see. I mean, after the Eagles game, I think there was definitely, at least the sense that I got was, you know, there was a need for a little bit of a reboot on the offense. And it was really about, I'd almost say, keep it simple, stupid. It was really about having a game plan that was more streamlined, that was designed around quick passes, designed around establishing the run, and not getting too fancy. I mean, you're absolutely right to say, you know, that maybe that they had been a little bit too gimmicky in recent weeks, and especially, you know, I don't think that Andy Reid has a lot of flaws as a head coach. And I think there is one area that I would say that is his one short point, is that sometimes I believe that he thinks that you can scheme and game plan and think your way out of problems. And that's true to an extent, but sometimes you just got to be able to line up on third and one and smash the other team in the face and get that yard. And, you know, and sometimes I think he sees it almost as more of a Rubik's Cube rather than, you know, just power on power football. And that's what you got to play sometimes. And to me, this offensive game plan that we saw this past weekend, now outside the maybe the opening script where I thought that they had some maybe slow developing plays, they had some screens early in the script that might have worked a lot of weeks, but with the way the Raiders were playing so fast and downhill, I mean, I was thinking probably just a bad timing. But you got into the meat of that game plan, and it was built around quick passes, quick decisions, running the football, not taking shots down the field, and that to me paid off. So yeah, I mean, I think you're going to continue to build on that. You build on that by, you know, obviously continue to get Travis Kelce involved. If Travis Kelce is double and triple covered, like he should be most of the time, you have to have somebody else step up. That is right now, to me, it's Rashee Rice. So he needs to get the ball. And, you know, and I think that once again, I mean, that touchdown pass to Rashee Rice was a perfect example. You can have big chunk plays without throwing the ball 30 yards downfield. That was a throw that I think went, what, 4 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, and he takes it 39. you know, that's what, and the Chiefs, they have, they've got some guys like Rashee Rice and Sky Moore, which they were also doing in this game, of getting him the ball in space. Sometimes the simplest plays can be your biggest plays. And I think they're realizing that. I think they're kind of going back to square one a little bit. You know, the word that we heard a lot after the game from the guys on the offensive side was fundamentals, just getting back to fundamentals. And that's what they did against the Raiders. It worked. And I think they should continue to do that. And I think they will. I mean, I think that was certainly probably, you know, they did it because I think that they wanted to have some success. I think there was that big thing for Andy Reid. He wanted this offense to be able to build some confidence, to have some plays that they could have some success on. But once again, the way the defenses are playing this team, and this is one thing I do want to, I kind of hit on this on another show earlier today over at Locked On Chiefs with Ryan Tracy. Antonio Pierce, the new head coach of the Raiders, even spelled it out when he said that they wanted to keep Patrick Mahomes in the pocket. Right now, that's what defenses are doing. They're playing a lot of zone, designed to clog up especially the deep end of the field. They are, you know, putting attention at special coverage, and they're shading their coverages towards Travis Kelce. So most of the time you're seeing him in at least double coverage, so not having a third guy hitting him on every play. But the zone defense is designed to take away the back end of the field. And right now they're spaced, you know, and one of the reasons why the Chiefs throw a lot of passes this weekend behind the line of scrimmage, because there's space there. There's space in the intermediate area of the field that they can attack and go to. Now it means your receivers have to get open, but it can also, you know, be what you did with Sky and Rashee, which is throwing the ball to them short and letting them work into those areas and pick up some yards, because the defenses are giving it to them. It comes back again to what, you know, the cliche, take what the defense is giving you. The defense right now are giving the Chiefs everything underneath. The defensive philosophy around the league right now, this year with Patrick Mahomes, has been make him hold on to the football, because if he holds on to the football long enough, the Chiefs will make a mistake. Either he will throw it into coverage, or he will hold on to it too long and take a sack, or force a fumble. He will just throw it in a direction where it's not covered, or it's covered, and he will, you know, make some deep throws that are not there right now, because it's not Patrick's fault. He does not have a receiver room right now that's built around that deep ball. What he's got is a receiver room really that can take advantage of the short immediate area of the field. So to me, what you did against the Raiders as the Chiefs, you keep doing it until somebody else stops it, because I think it can be pretty successful. GeoMenu, did Reid call all the plays this week? The Chiefs haven't really gone into details about, you know, whether it's, you know, Andy or Matt who's calling the plays. Typically, you know, one way they have done it a lot in the past is, and this is the thing that really gets often overlooked with game planning, is that the Chiefs detail things to a tremendous point. Whereas, you know, they've got a play sheet, and the play sheet will be everything, you know, it will be obviously their scripted plays, you know, the first 15, first 20, but then there's going to be a section on there, you know, for everything: first and long, second and long, third and long, third and short, second and short, medium. I mean, it is every imaginable scenario, I think, that you can think about. And then they go through on Friday and Saturday and talk about what play are we going to call in this situation? Okay, it's third and four, you know, 3 minutes to go. What are we calling right here? So there's pretty much, you know, a consensus on what they're going to call at every single moment. And so what's often happened is, you know, and certainly like last year with Eric Bieniemy, Eric Bieniemy would make a call, and it could be Andy Reid might overrule it, but he also might only do that zero times a game, once a game, six times a game. I mean, that could happen. I think there's a possibility that Matt Nagy is calling the plays this year, and Andy just has veto, but they're usually very tight-lipped about, you know, who's calling the plays. They want to create the illusion that it's always the offensive coordinator, but sometimes it's not. As for, you know, did Andy call it this week? Was the difference? It's possible. I mean, I'll try and check out for you, GeoMenu. I don't know if we'll get anybody to tell us, because that's, like I said, the Chiefs keep it as a closely guarded secret. But maybe that's a little bit of it. But I think the bigger thing this weekend with the Raiders was simply just, you know, it was a game plan that was built differently. And I think that's why. My good friend Audra, Dave wants to know, good friend Dave, if we were picking up any other running backs, or we have is what we have. Yeah, what you have is what you have. Certainly this year, at least. No, I don't think there's going to be any changes, even with Jerick McKinnon, you know, being dinged up a little bit. I don't see that changing. I mean, I do think that it is what it is. I mean, unless there's another injury, I mean, they've got Denerick Prince and LaMichael P. Ryan on the practice squad that they're both very happy with. I think they would absolutely be sticking around with those guys. So, no, I mean, unless there's a rash of injuries that they need to pick anybody else up, I think the running back room is what it is. And they've been very fortunate. I mean, except for really McKinnon, you know, being banged up with the groin here a little bit. And, you know, Clyde's had a couple of illnesses. But other than that, they've been a pretty healthy room this year. And, you know, and certainly Pacheco looks like he's fully healed from his offseason surgery. So he's been pounding the ball away. And honestly, I think Pacheco just looks like he's getting stronger as the season goes on. Brian, how do you about moving Sky to McKinnon role next season? Intriguing. I don't know if I'd be real excited about it because I do get it from a couple of standpoints. One, Sky looks really good out of the backfield, but I feel it's more in like maybe a Deebo Samuel type of looking good out of the backfield. I don't know. I mean, would I run with Sky more? I would on occasion. I mean, and you did it with Tyreek Hill. I mean, Tyreek lined up in the backfield and you know, and against the Eagles, the Chiefs ran a play with Kadarius Toney that was, you know, right out of the Tyreek Hill rookie backfield play. The real problem is just, you just don't want, you know, Sky is a tough kid. I'll give him that. Not the biggest guy in the world though. So I don't know if you want him taking too much punishment that he could take, and Sky would certainly, bless his heart, not be able to do some of the things on third down that Jerick McKinnon does. You know, as far as especially blocking, that kind of thing goes, McKinnon is light years ahead. I mean, helps being in the year, you know, league for 8 years and, you know, having the experience that he does. But McKinnon's also just got a different kind of mentality, even though he's a little guy. I mean, he punches above his weight when it comes on to taking blockers on. And nothing against Sky, but he's never been asked to do that before, and receivers have a different mindset and body. So I don't know if he'd be able to do that. But to your point, Brian, I mean, putting Sky in the backfield more and letting him, you know, work from there to get him the ball in space, I think there's a lot of merit to it. I mean, and I think we saw a little bit of that, you know, against the Raiders where they tried it out. I wouldn't mind seeing more of it, but as far as being like a permanent role where Sky moved to the backfield, no, I don't think we're going to do that. But I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, Sky in the backfield is an interesting thing to see on occasion. Let's go to Red Hood Chief. Any chance of a scheduled day for these live streams? I'm glad somebody asked about this, because I will throw this out there to all of you. If anybody's got some comments, I know there's a million of these things, and I want to do these things more regularly, but I'm always also even consciously thinking about, hey, you know, what are some of my other colleagues and friends doing live streams? Let me know. I mean, everybody, anybody, you know, hey, throw it out there. So what time? I mean, you think there's a time, because I know a lot of you listen to all the different shows and watch different streams. Put in the comments, you know, throw it on Facebook or YouTube, anywhere. I will gladly take intake, because I would like to do this on a regular basis so that you all know when they're coming and they just don't come out of the dark. But I also like to do it at a good time, you know, when there's not as many other shows on and more of you can jump on and everything. Had the Chiefs approached CEH about maybe turning into more of a power back? Seems like he's running more angry this year. Not that I'm aware of. I don't think that they have. I think that, you know, maybe part of that is just simply him being healthy, you know, for the first time in a long time. I mean, Clyde this year, I mean, it really has been a while since he has been this healthy. And so I think that's maybe a good part of why you're seeing him run a little bit stronger this year. I think it's also as a byproduct of when you just don't get used as much and you want to take advantage of your opportunities. So yeah, I think that may be part of why you're seeing that from Clyde. His real challenge would just be stature wise, you know, turning into a power back. I mean, I don't think you have any problems putting on some weight and putting on some muscle. It would certainly slow him down a little bit, but you know, that's the other thing, is that with his frame, you know, would he lose too much speed? Would he lose too much bounce, you know, with that? I mean, I think that a big part of his appeal as a running back is, you know, and honestly, I mean, I can see him maybe developing into, you know, as his career goes, maybe more of a McKinnon third down kind of back. Especially, you know, if he can just continues to pick up a little bit more of the, you know, being able to block, which I think he has done. Might need to add a little bit more muscle, but, you know, I think he could do it. And I think he's got the attitude for it. I don't think there's any problem with that. But, you know, yeah, that would just be the concern is just, you know, how much muscle, how much weight do you put on before he loses some of his bounce and his agility that was a big part of his game coming out, you know. And, you know, and you know, I think we've seen Kareem Hunt kind of make that move a little bit. I mean, Kareem's obviously much bigger and stronger than I think he was in the past. So maybe Clyde could do that. But, you know, the Chiefs haven't really, you know, gotten that power back, you know, format. I mean, other than having a fullback, which they don't have this year, they haven't really, it's been a while since they've had a power back. And I'm not even sure I can really say that Andy's ever had one, because most of his backs that he's had have, you know, been, you know, smaller guys and really built for speed. I mean, Jamaal Charles wasn't, you know, one of his draft picks or his guys, but he obviously made great use of him. And, but he's not a power back. So it's an intriguing idea, but, and I think he's got it in him. So it's possible. And maybe either, hey, if he stays in Kansas City or, you know, goes to his next stop, maybe that's something that that's going to happen to him. Marshall, coming back. Appreciate you, man. Most improved, George Leo, or did Trent jump more? Wow. That's a tough one, because Trent is obviously, I would say, based on just, you know, position and how he's playing, I mean, he's the better player overall. I mean, he's right now, I think he's a Pro Bowler, bare minimum. He's been that good. Question is, you know, the leaps that the other guys have made, because I'd say George made a really good leap. Leo's has been good too. And where Leo is really improved has been, to me, as an on-ball linebacker and a pass rusher and playing at the line of scrimmage. I think this is where he's really improved. I'd probably give the edge to Trent, just because Trent really didn't get to show as much of his game last year with the injury, and he was still pretty good. But, you know, last year, I can't say that, you know, that Trent was Pro Bowl, all pro caliber. And now I think he is. So I think he did make the jump. Now, he was, I mean, it was first round talent for a reason. And I think that, you know, the Chiefs made the right pick. I mean, certainly the interesting thing is you look at like Kyer Elam and Denver. I mean, that was basically what the Chiefs did. They jumped in front of Buffalo to make sure they could get Trent McDuffie. And Buffalo took Kyer Elam, and that has not worked out for them. So that was the right pick. I mean, they got their guy. But yeah, I think I would probably go with Trent, just because he has been so good this year. He was good last year. All three of those guys, you know, Leo, I think, has taken a really good leap too. George, I probably would say, took a huge leap last year from the first half of the year to the second half of the year. And we might have seen that with Trent had he not had the ankle injury and, you know, missed those games in the beginning of the season. We might have seen that jump last year. So I'll give it to Trent, but those other two guys have improved as well. So I will definitely not going to discredit them at all. Brian, thank you for the fist bumps. I appreciate that. Red Hood back. We're not using Noah Gray more. He seems to be consistent this year, which is something offense has been looking for. He has been more consistent. I'll give it to him. He absolutely has. Noah's an interesting player. I mean, the one concern I had when they drafted Noah was that he's smaller than your run-of-the-mill standard tight end. I mean, he's definitely a shorter guy. So he's not going to make some of the catches that Travis Kelce makes, because Travis probably has 3 or 4 inches on him at least, and probably can jump him a little bit too. I mean, that's not a knock against Noah. It's more just about what kind of a unicorn that Travis Kelce is. But yeah, I mean, Noah is, I think there's possibilities there. I mean, one of the reasons why the Chiefs drafted him was, you know, that was in the phase when Brett Veach was kind of really in the mode looking for his Trey Burton, maybe an Evan Engram type. And Noah hasn't gotten to that level. And maybe he just needs to get out of the shadow of Travis Kelce. And, you know, I don't think anybody wants that. I think you'd like to have both of these guys. But, you know, except for maybe, what, one game, and that would be the game against the Lions, we really haven't seen Noah Gray get to play without Travis around. So, you know, that's, I think, it's always going to be hard. I mean, I think even though they you know, give him a little bit more snaps here and there, he's still not getting a full-time kind of role. And I do. I mean, I do think the size is going to be a problem, because that's one thing is, you know, that I think Noah is always going to be a challenge for him, is going to be red zone, because that's where, as a tight end, you know, height can be such a big advantage, and that has been for Kelce. It was a huge advantage for Tony Gonzalez. That's why he was such a good red zone player, was his ability to kind of play above the rim, if you will, for the basketball analogy. That's not Noah's game, but I think his hands have improved. I think there have been some times when he has made some catches and plays this year more than any other, where I have had to do a double take because I thought he was Travis for a second. That's a compliment. So I think he's getting there. But yeah, I mean, the one reason why you're not going to always see Noah Graymore is you have Travis Kelce. But yeah, and he's always going to be the second fiddle. You know, how often do you get to see Noah out there when it's just him as the only tight end? It's not very often. So that would be the mean that, you know, that that's what he needs in order to really kind of get that opportunity, is to get more opportunities as the sole tight end. And it just doesn't happen very often. Going to KC Cody. Got some Wanye reps this week. Yes, you did. Looked good in limited snaps. Any early indicator on if we might have a 2024 starter on our hands? That is what the Chiefs hope. You know, and we'll see how that, you know, factors into the free agent decisions and draft picks. But Chiefs really do. I mean, they hope that they've got their something with Wanye. And I think it's very telling that, you know, the last couple of times when they have had to go for an injury onto the bench for a tackle, that it has been Wanye and it hasn't been Lucas Niang going into that spot. I mean, that's pretty telling to me that they've moved Wanye up, especially at left tackle. You know, there wasn't a thought. I mean, you know, when Donovan Smith had to come out for a few plays, Wanye stepped in there. I think that, you know, you put it to Brett Veach and Andy Reid right now, I think they would tell you that their hope is that Wanye would be a starter next year. And I think they want him starting at left tackle. I think their preference and their dream would be that Wanye is good enough to play and start at left tackle in 24, and you can keep Juwan Taylor on the right side. If they feel like that they need to, just as, you know, for grooming purposes and to get him acclimated into the league and to this level, then I think they would consider playing him at right tackle. But that's the dream right now. I mean, it is. And I think there's a reason to it. Now, I've talked to some people who said, yeah, there's still some shaky parts in his game, but that the Chiefs, they really seem to love him. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, with a full off season where he can be at, but that's their preference. I mean, they would like for Wanye to be able to win that left tackle job. Let's see. Jack, I appreciate it. And yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to try and get the podcast stream up, so that not only would you be able to get these videos on there, but I would love to do some podcasts as well. And there's some things that I feel like I could do that maybe, you know, that, because that's one thing that I've always tried to do for all of you guys and gals out there. I try to tell at least stories that hopefully you're not getting elsewhere. And that's kind of my strength. So I'd love to be able to do some interviews with some of the players and everything, you know, during locker room access that I could share with all of you that maybe you don't get elsewhere all the time. Because I definitely spend time in the parts of the locker room that everybody else ignores, because those are my players. I call them my guys, because I think it's pretty important to keep in touch with the practice squad players and the rookies, because those are the players who are going to be the stars of the future. And I like getting to know everybody in the locker room. So I always usually tell people, I usually go the opposite direction of where the cameras are and the microphones are, because I know there's a story somewhere else. I would love to bring you some of those. So yeah, I mean, with the support, I would love to get a podcast up and maybe include some interviews from the locker room, because I think you guys would like to hear that. So we'll see if we can get it done. But that's the next step in building the Matt Derrick Chiefs Digest empire. Wrap it up here, and I might go a few more minutes longer and grab some of the questions from Twitter as well, because we've had a good time here with us, all the comments. I appreciate it. Ethan, do you think we sign L'Jarius Sneed to an extension, or will he be too expensive? I really fear that we're seeing the last of L'Jarius Sneed in Kansas City. I hate to say it. I hate to throw it out there. because, you know, it's Legarius has been a great player for the Chiefs, and he is a fun guy to watch. He's an easy guy to root for. You know, he is very humble. Even when he is being kind of braggadocious, it's with a sense of humor. And, you know, last week, I know he got asked about, Justin Reed saying he and Trent McDuffie are the best, you know, cornerback duo in the league, and what did he think? And he says, I agree. But he did it with a smile and a laugh that, you know, doesn't come across as diva or anything like that. And he is not that guy. I mean, for a shutdown corner that he has become, he is the least diva cornerback that I think I've ever met. He and Trent McDuffie both are not divas. And that says a lot about both of them, because sometimes cornerbacks can be divas. And Kansas City fans know what I'm talking about when I say that cornerbacks can be divas. But Legarius, here's the thing about him, though, is that I think the teams are going to be concerned about the knee. That, you know, kept him out of almost all the training camp this year. You know, the Chiefs, you know, he had that swelling in his knee and inflammation, and the Chiefs kept him out of training camp for the most part because they wanted him to be as fresh as he could and try and get through the season this year. I don't know that that knee necessarily needs surgery. It's possible. Maybe he gets it this offseason. Maybe he puts it off again. That's my sense, is that he probably does need some work done in there. And, you know, that will be something that teams get into in free agency, will be to consider that. I mean, to me, the only thing I can really ever remember else that, you know, LJ has been concussion. But the knee is a problem, because I think that there might be some teams that are worried that it could pop up and be a long-term issue. How he has played on the field, his numbers, and what he has done against number one receivers, this guy is a $16 million player, and the Chiefs can't afford a $16 million cornerback. It's also a little bit now, I think Brett Veach gets a kind of a rough deal on saying that he doesn't put resources into the cornerback position, because obviously now he's drafted one, you know, in first round. He's put a lot of draft picks into the position. He has put some free agent money, maybe not as much as, you know, some other teams. And they let some guys walk. I mean, they let Chavarius Ward walk. They let, you know, Kendall Fuller walk. I think that Legarius will probably be a price where they will have to let him walk, just from a cap standpoint. And I do, I mean, there are some flags. I mean, and the flags for me with Legarius are just injury. I think that some teams will probably be worried that with his physical style of play that, you know, Legarius might get some injuries, because he doesn't shy away from contact. He hits people, and that's what makes him a great player, but I can see some teams being concerned about it. So, I think that some team or two teams or three teams are going to look at what he has done this year as far as taking out number one receivers repeatedly, and they're going to offer him a ton of money. And honestly, I mean, I think that the job that Chavarius Ward has done in San Francisco will help him, because it's proven that Kansas City corners can leave. And the underrated part of all of this is that Dave Merritt is one of the best defensive coaches in the league, you know, as the defensive backs coach for the Chiefs. And any team who's thinking to themselves that they can't use a Dave Merritt coach player is crazy. I would take anybody that Dave Merritt has gotten his hands on, because that's going to be a player that can play. I mean, just look what he's done with all these young corners. It speaks volume. So I think somebody's going to spend a lot of money on Legarius. So yeah, that could be a problem. Marshall coming back. Can Spags rely on blitzing Baltimore or more contain? Really good question, because, I mean, chances are Chiefs are could face the Baltimore in the playoffs. I mean, that's definitely one of the teams on the table. Can you blitz them? I mean, yeah, I think you can. Steve Bill doesn't have to blitz all the time. I mean, he will be very selective. And that's the thing. I mean, I think that when you're talking about Baltimore and Lamar, you know, when you're blitzing him, I think it's going to be in very specific situations. I mean, it'll be third and eight. It'll be passing downs, you know, specific passing downs. The great thing about that, though, is that, you know, with Spags, it's that it's not really if he's going to blitz, it's where he's going to blitz, to me, sets, and with this team, because literally this team, more than almost any other that I have certainly seen in Kansas City, and maybe any team that I can ever think of. I mean, there's a few others that were out there, you know, probably some Baltimore teams of the past were really good at that. Maybe your 85 Bears were really good at it. But this team literally has an entire they could pass rush 11 different players on the field at any time, and you'd be comfortable with that. I mean, I'd be fine with Brian Cook blitzing. He's done it. I mean, you know, your third and fourth safeties can blitz. Your fourth and fifth linebackers can blitz. Your starters all can blitz. Your corners can all blitz. You know, I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, Baltimore's got a third and eight. Lamar's going to have to throw it. Where's the blitz coming from? He's not going to know. I mean, because teams don't know. I mean, that's the thing that with Spags this year. I mean, you can really do a good job of disguising your blitzes. So yeah, I mean, now standard, you know, 75-80% of the plays. Yeah, I mean, your job is going to be to make sure that you contain Lamar and you set the edge and you don't let him beat you. But yeah, I don't think Spags would be afraid to blitz Lamar in certain situations, though, especially in the right situations. Ed E, which defensive free agents do you think the Chiefs will try to keep? Let me go, and I should be able to remember all the free agents off the top of my head, but sometimes looking ahead a year, I'll forget. I mean, you know, Chris Jones is obviously going to be the big one. Can they keep him? It's going to be tough. I mean, let's be realistic. That's going to be a hard one. They've got the power of the franchise tag, so it's a possibility, but it's going to take some work. Let's see. I want to think you're talking specifically on the defensive side and which ones to keep. I mean, Mike Edwards is a guy I would try to keep. You know, whether you can keep him affordably, though, you know, that's a $3 million third safety. Is that a luxury? I wouldn't mind keeping that. But, you know, if his season this year gets him a deal elsewhere, might lose him. But that's a guy I would try to keep. Tershawn Wharton's for potential free agent this year. Has he done enough to win a big deal, especially coming off the injury? He's probably going to need a one-year prove it deal. So that's a pretty good guy that you might be able to keep by a one-year deal. Willie Gay is an interesting one, because I think the Chiefs would like to keep him. Question's going to be, again, you know, has he done enough to earn a big money deal, or is he going to be available affordably on a one-year deal? Might be out of the Chiefs price range. And here's at least an indicator. I asked Brett about this during training camp, because when he was hired, you know, he said that one of his core philosophies was that with your players you drafted, if you want to keep them, you need to sign them after year three. You don't let them get to free agency. You sign them after year three. That's not always possible, because sometimes the player will want to, you know, go out and prove it in their fourth year and see if they can get more money on a free agent market. So that's not always going to happen, especially if, you know, you're not prepared to make that player significantly, you know, paid over the market, you know, or at least, you know, at the top of the market. So whenever I see a player on the Chiefs that gets into their fourth season under the rookie contract and hasn't been signed to an extension, the next time I see one of those guys, one of those players, after their fourth year, sign a multi-year deal, will be the first. Because at this point, no one that Brett Veach has ever drafted, and granted, we're very early into the Brett Veach tenure, so there's not a lot of options here, but no one that has gone into their fourth year has he been able to retain. No one that, you know, he has had an option to keep who didn't sign an extension after year three and was available as a free agent as year four. The only two that have signed extensions in those situations, or signed, you know, long-term deals in those situations were Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones. Those are the only two players that the Chiefs have had under Brett Veach that, you know, have did not, and that one, the Chiefs were able to either sign an extension to after year three, like Mahomes, or in Jones's case, you know, signed him after year four, which, you know, that took some doing to get done. But those are the only two players. Otherwise, every potential, you know, player that the Chiefs have drafted that has played out year three without an extension and goes into year four has all hit the market, and none of them have signed a long-term deal. A few of them, like your Derek Nottis, Al Greddy, have come back on one-year deals, but nobody signed a long-term deal. So I assume that anytime that the Chiefs have one of their rookies that enters year three, goes into year four without an extension, they're not coming back unless it's on a one-year deal. So Willie Gay, I mean, could he be a one-year guy? Maybe. I mean, I think it's much more like with a Tershawn Wharton. But Willie Gay, I mean, I think they'd like to keep him, but, you know, is somebody going to offer him more? I think there's a distinct possibility of that. Derek Nnadi's another one. I mean, he's been coming back on one-year deals. And I'll tell you what, the way that Derek Nnadi has played this year, he deserves a multi-year deal from somebody. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is the year he finally gets it. He has been healthy, which has also been another issue. You know, he's had some, I think, back problems, and he's had some elbow issues. This year has been fully healthy, and, you know, that might be the key to him getting a deal this offseason, because I think he's earned it. Mike Dana is the other one that, you know, that one, I don't know that the Chiefs tried after year three. They may have, and it could have been that Mike was like, hey, let's play it out. Let's see what we can do in a contract year. And he's having a great contract year. So to me, that's going to be a tough one to get done. But Mike Dana, I think they would absolutely try to keep, but can they? I mean, I think he might be out of their price range, unfortunately, because he's playing really well. Red Hood Chief, hypothetical, FAU and Carl Loftus both show out the next few years. Who do the Chiefs keep to team with Stuffy McDuffie? Yeah, we do need a good name for Trent. Good name for Trent. I mean, I can't think of anything better than Stuffy McDuffie right now, but I'm not sure he would love it. But that's a good question. I mean, because right now, I mean, Felix Anudike Uzomah, you have to give him an incomplete, and that's not any fault of his. You know, I talked with my guy Nick Jacobs on our 41 is the Mike podcast yesterday about Felix and why he's not playing more. And, you know, a big reason why is because he's, you know, fourth on the depth chart. You've got George Karloftis playing great. You got Mike Dana playing great. You got Charles Omenihu coming back, and he's playing really well. Those guys are playing better than him, so they're going to play in front of him. Chris Jones is kicking outside on occasion, so he's playing in front of him. I don't know any of those snaps that you're giving to Felix. And two, you know, he missed with the hand injury all the offseason workouts. So that was 16 practices. That's a big deal. So, you know, he started out kind of behind the eight ball going into training camp, and it was hard. I mean, they dumped a lot on him, you know, and I think he survived, and maybe in a way he thrived. But I felt like that, you know, once the Chiefs drafted him and knowing that the hand injury was what it was going to be, the Chiefs were always banking on 24, 25, 26, and 27 for Felix of being, you know, impact player. They felt like, hey, if this year he can give you reliable snaps or even step into a bigger role if needed because of injuries, great. But I think they always knew that this was going to be kind of a redshirt year for him. So, you know, you still need to see something, you know. So next year's a big year for Felix. Right now, though, I mean, based on Carl Loftus, you know, the first time you're going to be able to sign him to an extension is going to be next January. So January of 25. If he has a third year like this year is, because he's going to be at this point, I mean, he's on pace for double digit sacks. I mean, if he has another year like that next year, you know, 10 to 12 sacks, I would have no trouble signing George Karloftis to a long-term deal. I think that FAU 24 is the big year. I mean, that's the one that you really want to see him play out. But and with both those guys, great thing is that they, hey, you've got fifth year options with each of them. So, you know, you don't have to make that decision, but you can if you want to. Michael, which teams left to play? Can Sky have a breakout game like Rasheed did against Las Vegas so we can all start breathing easier? I tell you what, I'm one of those that thought Sky would have already had a breakout game by now, because he just looked like he had such a good offseason and training camp, and seemed so much more confident. And I'm still kind of surprised that it hasn't happened. Now there's some opportunities. I mean, there absolutely are. This is one of those games. I mean, this weekend, I mean, the Green Bay Packers have decent pass defense. I mean, it's they're good. I mean, they're a much better pass defense than they are run defense. So, but could he kind of get lost in the shuffle? You know, because if the Packers are watching last week and they're going to overreact and put a little bit more attention on Rasheed, and they're going to try and take out Travis, you know, could Sky get some one-on-one matchups this week that are very favorable against maybe, you know, the number three corner or against the safety? Yeah. I mean, I think, hey, there's a possibility. So I think there's some opportunities. There's some defenses that the Chiefs are going to face in the next few weeks that, I mean, you know, hey, they face the Raiders again. So that at home. So, Rashid had his breakout game against the Raiders. Maybe Sky can have his against them. I mean, there's some possibilities there. So I would not be surprised at all if Sky finally had a good game. And I think he needs it. I mean, I think it would be good for his confidence. I think it would be good for the team as well. So I do have some questions that came from Twitter. So I'm going to fly through them real quick. If anybody else still has a question, fire away and I'll answer it before I duck out of here, but really appreciate everybody who's popped on tonight. Appreciate the contributions and the superstars. I'm still getting all used to this, but the super contributors, whatever we get to call you, really appreciate it. That makes, you know, everything that I do at Chiefs Digest possible, and really truly appreciate that. Let's see. Well, thought I had them loaded, but they have disappeared. So that goes with, loading up Twitter questions for the first time on one computer and then trying to open them on another and them not being in the cloud. Fantastic. Let me jump over real quick. I know I can see some of them real quick here, because I know that a couple of them we've already kind of covered in some other questions and everything. But there was at least a couple of interesting ones that were a challenge. So my guy Jesse was asking about the Chiefs fan base is becoming somewhat spoiled, like the Patriots fan base. Do you think the rest of the NFL views us in that light? I've been concerned about that. I don't know if it's there yet. I figured at some point the Mahomes exposure was going to make the Chiefs a hated team across the country. And there's no doubt there are some people who do hate the Chiefs, and you do see some, I think, pushback. It's probably more local media in a lot of places that push back against the Chiefs a little bit. But I'll tell you what, I mean, one thing I probably discounted when I thought that the Chiefs would become public enemy number one is that I discounted how likable Patrick is. Tom Brady, not the most likable guy in the world. Some people love him, some people don't, but he kind of had the too cool for you attitude, and Patrick doesn't. I mean, Patrick comes off as a regular person in a lot of ways. So I think that has probably helped him. I mean, you know, certainly his popularity is rivaling, you know, Tom's at his peak. I think you could argue, you know, which was stronger. I mean, you can look at jersey sales, and, you know, I think Tom probably still has him a little bit in the kind of the highest of highs. But Patrick's obviously reputation is getting up there, and gets a few more rings, it'll certainly be up there. But I don't know if Patrick's ever going to be public enemy number one the way that Tom was. And we'll see about Travis. I worry about Travis maybe, you know, getting overexposed, and if the NFL continues to make such a big deal out of Travis and his relationship, that it will alienate some people. How about those Chiefs? Always appreciate your questions and support. Everything's been, I really appreciate everybody who's coming over from How About Those Chiefs to watch over here. Very kind of all of you. When will Jawan Taylor quit drawing multiple flags every single game? He did go three games without a flag, so he had that going for him, but that was another rough one in Vegas. Although I think he got a raw deal on the false start, because I think the entire line false started on that play. I think Donovan Smith even jumped before he did, but Jawan got the flag. But and honestly, the holding penalties that he's drawn are more of a concern for me than the false starts, even though the false starts are starting to go away a little bit. Chiefs need to clean that up across the board. They are amongst the most five heavily penalized teams in the league when it comes to holding. And those are the drive killers. False start, 5 yards, it's not great. You know, first and 15, not ideal. But first and 20 or second and 22, those are what stall drives. So, and they've got those across the board. Really Creed and Joe Tooney are probably the only two that haven't had them piling up. Those are your two least penalized. But, you know, Trey's had some holding problems, and that's pretty consistent. I mean, you know, it just goes back to a little bit about your hand placement and making sure that you don't get outside and letting your hands get away from you a little bit. and you know, sometimes you're going to get beat, and that's where some of the holds on the tackles at least will happen. You know, guys going on your outside of you, and you can let that outside arm get up around their neck, and you're going to get called for that most of the time. So sometimes it's a footwork thing, sometimes it's a speed thing, but more often than not, it's just hand placement. And that's something that I'm kind of surprised that Andy Heck hasn't kind of clamped down on yet. I think that's something that they definitely need to watch. So we'll see. Veach's Burner, great Twitter account name. I wish it were Veach's Burner. I know he's got a burner account. I got to find out where it is one day. I know it's not this one, though. But rank the three most difficult AFC playoff matchups that the Chiefs might face. I've been thinking about that because I saw that question earlier, and I've been thinking about it. I mean, you know, I think you would certainly say some of the usual suspects and who you'd think about. I don't know where I would put Miami. I mean, I think I'm still putting the Ravens at number one because they can play defense. And that's what I think, you know, especially in a year where the Chiefs offense has not been its peak self, that could be a problem. I'm not as worried about this year with the way that the Chiefs defense has played, about them going up against the top offense. And some of the top offenses are not what they once were. I mean, am I worried as much about Buffalo as in past years? No. I mean, to Buffalo, if the Chiefs knock them down to 6-7 next week after their bye, Buffalo's got a tough schedule left. I mean, that might be the end of Buffalo as a playoff team this year. Cincinnati's 5-6, and without Joe Burrow, are they going to make the playoffs? I don't think so. So there's a couple of, you know, normally high-powered offenses that you're not worrying about right now. The two teams that I think I would probably be most worried about, and one of them I did not think I would say this about, but one being the Ravens, two being Cleveland, just because Cleveland's defense is playing really well. Their offense is terrible, even with Deshaun. I mean, they're not good. I mean, they've scored some points this year. I mean, they're not the worst team in the league. I mean, they are 15th in the league in scoring. Part of that is because their defense is so good. I mean, it sets them up into some good situations. They get some turnovers. I mean, that helps them out a lot, but that offense is not scary at all. I mean, so I think the Chiefs would have absolutely no trouble shutting that defense down, but you know, But that defense, yeah, I mean, I think it could give the Chiefs some problems. So the Browns, that's scary just because I think that they could keep you, you know, on a good day in the teens. And even against the mediocre offense, I mean, mediocre offense with an opportunistic defense, you know, can beat the wrong team on the wrong day. I don't know. I'm not brave enough right now to say that Denver's a playoff team at 6-5. I mean, Sean Payton is figuring things out there, though, and they're starting to get some things moving in the right direction. I am not going to be brave enough to say that they're one of the three teams. I would say, I mean, even though I should say Miami because of the firepower that they have, but the Chiefs have beaten them. I think the Chiefs know the playbook for beating the Dolphins. I think they would beat them again. I would probably circle around to who is the best coach out there. And to me, the best potential playoff coach out there still left is Mike Tomlin. So I'd probably put him as my third team because once again, I mean, it's a team built around defense. Yardage wise, they're a bend but don't break team, but they're a very good bend but don't break defense. So once again, not very scary offense, but I think when we're talking about defenses outside Kansas City, those are probably three best defenses, I think, that, you know, could be in the playoffs. And that, to me, would be just what you would worry about, is one of those defenses having a good day against your offense in a year when your offense hasn't been its best. So I could possibly see that. Let's see if there. One last question from Twitter from Mr. Proctober. If you have choose two of Snead, Bolden, Creed, and Trey to keep long term, who do you pick? That is absolutely a cruel, cruel Sophie's Choice kind of question here, because you want to keep all four of them. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think from just a cost standpoint, I think I would probably have to say you let Snead walk. I mean, I would hate for the Chiefs to have to do that because, like we talked about earlier, he's such a good player, great attitude. I mean, he's everything that you want in a player. But when you've got Trent McDuffie and then you've got other young guys and you've got Dave Merritt who can coach the heck out of these guys and can really, I mean, elevate any corner, I would trust, you know, McDuffie and Watson and Williams going forward. And anybody else that you want to put in that room for Dave Merritt, I think he can get it done. Then you want me to choose two. So I have to, between Bolton, Creed, and Trey, I have to let one of those guys walk. Oh, man. I don't know if I can do it. I mean, I don't know if I have the braveness to do it. I mean, based on just how – gosh, that's cruel. I mean – I'm trying to wait to not put Trey at number three. I mean, I think you'd have to because right now, to me, Creed and Nick are both Pro Bowl players. Trey is really close too. Trey is right there as well. And all three of them are absolutely great locker room presence as well as leaders and everything. So, I mean, all four, I mean, those are four hard choices, but Snead, Bolton, Creed, and Trey. The Chiefs' two priorities would be Bolton and Creed. I would probably go with that as well, but it would absolutely break my heart to not try and sign Trey. And it's going to be tough not to sign Creed as well. And I hope he can stick around. I really do because he's a fun guy to watch. And you guys all deserve to be able to watch as many good players as you can. And he's just, this year has been absolutely phenomenal for Legarius Sneed. So, let's see if anybody else has popped in with any quick questions before we take off. Michael, come back. Any surprising snap counts for the receivers versus Las Vegas? Really, you know, and pull them up real quick so I'm not just talking off the top of my head. The only one that really surprised me and it was that I thought that the Chiefs might cut a little bit into Marquez's snaps just because he had a rough week. You know, it could have been certainly they did not want to do that because they want him to keep his head in the game and they want to show that they do have confidence in him. And I don't think there's any wavering. I mean, I do think that they view him as one of their top three receivers. So I think he's going to, you know, continue to be a big part of the rotation. But Chiefs snap counts, Rice with 40, Watson had 34, Sky Moore 34, Marquez 32, Richie James 9, Montrell Washington 2. Not really. I mean, I thought there was a possibility that the Chiefs might work Richie James in a bit more. 15% was a little bit on the low end. I really want to see what Richie James can do. So I thought they might try and get him a little bit more work. I also understand 8-game absence. Yeah, you want to work him back slowly. So that makes sense to me. But it was a fairly even rotation. But I do. I mean, I think that Rice is probably going to be your snap leader the rest of the way. Watson and Moore will probably be in that conversation at 2 and 3. Probably be some weeks where Marquez is still your number two receiver in snaps. I mean, I think that it's going to be pretty close. And the question is going to be what it'll look like when Kadarius gets back. He'll certainly take a few from everybody a little bit, but probably from Rashee is the only one that I would say he wouldn't take any snaps from. I think you're going to get Rashee out there as much as possible. Because his percentage, Rashee's was 67. I mean, I think he can play a higher percentage than that. I mean, Chiefs only ran 60 offensive plays, so that was a fairly low number. I think there's more room there, but not a ton of surprise. I still, like I said, I would like to see Richie James more, but we'll see if that happens. And Red Hood Chief, a fun one for the end. Based on your model behind you, this is probably a mute question, but are you a Star Wars fanatic or a Trekkie? Technically, I consider myself both. I'm a huge, you know, Star Wars and Star Trek fan. So I have many more collectibles of Star Wars because that's my hardcore collecting fashion. Yes, as you can see directly behind me are the set of Banks. Yes, coin banks. You put your little coins in of Darth Maul, Obi-Wan, and Qui-Gon Jinn. Yes, you can see on the other, over my other shoulder. Yes, there's shelves there for, I have a Star Wars shelf, one and a half Star Wars shelf. I have a Royals shelf. I have a Simpsons shelf. You got Mickey Mouse over here, the golfer. I have a collecting, you know, collecting interest in everything. But I'm both, but I do pretty, I, well, let's see. I mean, I have seen every Star Trek, you know, live action series. I haven't seen all of the animated ones. I've tried to, but that's not that much my jam. So, and the same thing with Star Wars. I have not seen all of I haven't seen the Clone Wars all the way through or anything like that. So those I've just haven't gotten into as much, but I have seen all of the live action. So I consider myself both. I'm an equal opportunity nerd, but there was a person in Jordan Cole, Jordan Cherkovic, who used to work for the Chiefs. She's now a coach over in Carolina, climbing up the ranks over there. She was a huge Star Trek fan, and I pretended just to hate Star Trek just so we could get in fights over which one was best, because she hated Star Wars, and I just found that unacceptable. But in my book, Star Wars and Star Trek both are fantastic. So you'll never catch me downgrading either one. Star Trek Discovery Strange New Worlds might be my favorite Trek. I mean, that has really grown on me. So thank you all. I really appreciate everybody jumping on tonight. Like I said, I want to continue doing more of these. I want to do it more regularly scheduled. So give me your feedback. Let me know what you like. I am also trying to create memberships on YouTube. And if I get some of those going, then I will definitely be doing more of those, because you're paying for them and you deserve them. But anything you do to support Chiefs Digest, I really appreciate it. And, you know, obviously go read the site, get paid for advertising there. So appreciate you watching the videos, obviously. And like I said, you know, hoping to get this up on a podcast stream pretty soon, and maybe add some more options to that as well. So you are all very kind. I appreciate the kind words. Appreciate all the questions. We will do this again soon. We might even do it next week if everybody's up for it. So thank you very much. Have a great night. And we'll check in with you later throughout the week for coverage. And, you know, I know for the next thing you'll hear from me for sure will be on 41 is the Mic with my guy, Nick Jacobs, when we are breaking down the Chiefs at the Green Bay Packers. Thanks a lot, everybody. I appreciate you.